Hey, it's Danielle, Will, and Ryder from Pod Meets World. Thanks to our friends at Hyundai, we were able to record a very special episode for you guys at the one and only, wait for it,
Boy Meets World House.
Take a listen.
Are there any moments or spots on any of the sets we worked on over the 7 years that you guys felt more at home, that were like your little spots on the set you like to hang out?
I'm afraid it was the sink.
Oh, really? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You had to act by the sink a lot.
Yeah.
I was behind the counter.
Yeah.
Right. Doing business constantly.
Uh-huh.
Mom stuff.
Uh-huh. And disciplining you in some way.
This has been brought to you by the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5. New episode out now. You can listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical bill expert, finding savings can seem impossible. Well, HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. So start saving with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
This is 24, a weekly highlight reel from the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show, featuring all things election coverage. Let's get started. Here are Clay and Buck.
It's a little bit of a happy moment, a little bit of a come together moment, where finally, after, well, it wasn't a bruising primary actually at all. It was almost no primary, which might factor into why there's almost a feeling of magnanimity right now coming from Trump on this issue. Looks like everything's going just fine. You had a meeting that was reported on yesterday between Donald Trump and the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, who I do think is still, by anybody who pays attention to these things, and is a conservative, the best governor in America. There are some other excellent governors. I think Kevin Stitt in Oklahoma is doing a great job, and Kim Reynolds in Iowa is doing a really good job. I mean, there are a whole bunch of governors. You know, I know our Texas friends, our good friends like Jesse Kelly and Michael Berry. I'd leave it to them to judge how Texas's governor is doing overall. But we just had Paxton on, who's the attorney general. And I got to say, sometimes the governor of Texas, I think, does a pretty good job. I think
Greg Abbott's done a phenomenal job on the border and handling protests so far. The other one I would mention, Brian Kemp. They cleaned out Emory. Guy has one of the highest population popularity numbers anywhere in the country. Won by 7 or 8, stomp Stacey Abrams. There are a lot of good Republican governors, and my governor, Bill Lee, I think has done a pretty good job on a lot of fronts.
Yeah, so you've got good governors there. I mean, if you were trying to figure out the worst governor in America, oh, man, I know a lot of my New York friends would argue with people that Kathy Hochul is as bad as it gets. But you got Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan. You got some really bad governors in the mix on the Democrat side of things. Anyway, no question, Ron DeSantis has done a phenomenal job in Florida based on everything that you can objectively see. People moving here, economic growth. I mean, and people complain about the cost of housing. Yeah, it's supply and demand, and it is way too expensive. Let me just say, but that's because people want to live here, right? I mean, it's, you know, why are like, you know, Mercedes so expensive as cars? People want them. Right? I mean, you know, they can charge the prices they do. It's what the market will bear. And people want to live in Florida, so it's very expensive. Anyway, DeSantis had a meeting in Miami with Trump, and Trump put this out on Truth Social, which Clay watches the stock. Do I need to put some money into, but then I, if I put money into Truth Social, am I not allowed to talk about Truth Social? Right. That's the thing. So I have to stay
out.
I
don't know. We told you it was going to be a crazy ride. The stock was at $70 roughly at the end of March. It then fell to $22 by mid-April. It's now basically back to 50 as we come to the end of the month. This is not the stock if you just want to put it in the
bank account. It is not set it and forget it. It is a roller coaster ride
every day,
no matter what.
Yes.
So Trump on Truth Social, that's why I was thinking about it, put this out there. I'm just going to read this to you. I am very happy to have the full and enthusiastic support of Governor DeSantis of Florida. We had a great meeting yesterday arranged by mutual friend Steve Witkoff at his beautiful Shell Bay Club in Hollywood, Florida. The conversation mostly concerned how we would work closely together to make America great again. Also discussed was the future of Florida, which is fantastic. I greatly appreciate Ron's support in taking back our country from the worst president in the history of the United States. November 5th is a big day. There you go.
From Pretty the good accent.
From the thank you. From the death. Next time I'll do it in a Cajun accent to really mess things up.
Not the New Orleans accent, himself. Though. That's hugely different.
Yeah, we don't want to get those confused. Look, this is, it's good to see. And I think on the one hand, it's just, we had said this was coming and because people got very passionate. Remember, why are you endorsing DeSantis? Why are you endorsing Trump? Or you're pushing too hard for DeSantis. You're pushing too hard for Trump. We said, look, we're just talking about what they're saying. We can't endorse. We don't endorse. We have a rule, the Rush rule. Now everyone gets to just hold hands and now we get to put on helmets and fight the communists, but we're all doing it together, which is the good thing. And this is the one bit, the one more broad political takeaway I have from this, Clay, because we knew this was going to happen with Trump and DeSantis, and it's a good thing. And I'm glad to see that this is where it's going. And I still hope that Governor DeSantis just has a big role in GOP politics going forward, setting the example he has in Florida. And maybe he's going to run again in 28. We'll see. But the prosecutions of Donald Trump, I think, have not only failed to turn people against Trump, I think that they have also ensured a circling of the wagons, a consolidation of support around Donald Trump, because even if you are, you know, you can go down the list. We all know what they are, the criticisms of Trump. Couldn't get the following things done in the first term. You know, there are Republicans, and I don't mean never Trumpers, and I don't think it's helpful to conflate those things. Never Trumpers are Democrats who lie to everybody, right? There are Republicans who are critical of Trump, but will still support Trump, or have been critical of Trump, but now are totally behind him. And I think even for those individuals who are cautious in their support of Trump in the past, Clay, to see what's gone on with the civil lawfare, the criminal prosecutions, the craziness they have unleashed against him, I think they've helped ensure that it truly is Trump's party again, just in time for the election.
There's a funny, now they're not going to have this case, but there was the poll out, I believe it was from CNN, which said that if Trump were convicted, this was from GE, a Harvard Harris poll. If Trump is convicted for inciting the Capitol riots of January 6th, who would you vote for? Trump 52-48. His margin in this poll actually went up if he was convicted for inciting the riots of January 6th. So it is in some level potentially the case that these charges have been the best advertisement possible for Trump, because they have solidified his argument that all of the government is arrayed against him and that he is standing between you, meaning all of us, and otherwise chaos. And even today, when Merchan came out, the judge in the New York City case, and said, I'm finding Trump in contempt 9 different times, he fined him $9,000 and then complained that the overall cost, basically his power, given Trump's wealth, was not significant enough to deter his behavior. $9,000 to Trump is the equivalent of many people out there getting like a $5 parking fine. If it's not significant enough, more of just kind of a sign of how little there is a consequence. So he said, Buck, that now he's got to think about jailing Trump if he is continuing to act in contempt of court. And I actually think this would be the best thing ever for Trump if they put him in jail for speaking out about how ridiculous the case is against him. I feel like his poll numbers would go up even more. So we're 3 weeks in to this trial. If anything, I bet you would agree with me, most people are paying more attention to the protests on college campuses than they are to the Trump trial, to the extent that you can compare the two in terms of what's going on. And if you are paying attention to them, either it's making you more steadfast in your support of Trump, or it's making you less likely to support Biden. I think they've destroyed. They only had two real arguments to me, Buck. They had, and still have, abortion, which they're going to run as hard as they can. It's basically the only issue they have. But they, in 2022, ran on democracy and January 6th as an insurrection, and Trump is a unique threat to democracy. I think a lot of people say, wait a minute, you're trying to put your chief political opponent in prison for the rest of his life. I think that's canceled out the democracy argument for Democrats.
Yeah, I think that they've created a situation where they've overplayed their hand, and they've become exactly what they pretend to be fighting against in the eyes of the public, which is the election interference here. It couldn't be more obvious. I'd also say, Clay, that because there's no cameras in the courtroom and because the subject matter so far, I mean, let's be honest, this is like, it's like they're holding a criminal prosecution of Donald Trump for ripping the mattress tags off prematurely or something. It couldn't be, you know, the things that say you cannot remove under penalty of law.
Oh, yeah.
You know
what I'm talking about? Yeah.
It couldn't be more boring. Okay. A business records trial. I know they're saying, oh, but Stormy Daniels and the payoff, and maybe they're going to call Stormy Daniels as a witness. It's just not interesting. And it's certainly not horrifying and criminal and you know, worthy of high drama. And so I think it's really hard for the Democrats to get away with spinning this as anything other than a harassment campaign. I mean, just the fact of what they're doing, what they're proposing as the crimes that Trump committed, and that there's no high courtroom drama. We're all sitting here. It's like they're forcing Trump to go through, you know, DEI training for the trial or something. I mean, it's really boring, nonsensical stuff.
I think that's true. And also, it's all public before. So really, there's no new revelation that I have seen come out of any of this court proceeding. And so I think it's ultimately working to Trump's favor. And according to Mark Simone, maybe helping Trump to make a case to win New York. That would be the ultimate kick in the teeth thing here. If, let's say, Buck, that we got a mistrial, which there's a 20% chance of, according to the gambling markets, Poly Market, and then Trump were able to make New York competitive because they forced him to stay up here for 6 or 8 weeks, and he kept going out and meeting with the construction workers, and he kept going and meeting with all the different people all over. Remember, they cheered him in Harlem. This is why I started off the show by saying tomorrow is May 1. I think there's starting to be a legit panic among Democrats as they look. I mean, we talked about this, was it last week, I believe? Axios reported that they're now, when Biden walks to and from the helicopter, trying to surround him with aides because he looks too infirm if he walks by himself. I mean, this is a panic. Imagine that's your election strategy is, let's just not let people see the guy who is the president of the United States by himself very often.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Why are people still on the fence about owning gold and silver? I just don't understand.
Have we already forgotten about regional bank closures, inflation, global instability, and the potential for serious world conflicts?
You can look to precious metals for various reasons. One, having tangible currency on hand as part of your bug out plan. Two, diversifying your portfolio as a hedge against inflation. And three, historically, gold increases in value over time.
You keep yourself informed about global events. You see the increase in conflicts around the globe. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either.
The people with Oxford Gold Group are real pros. They make owning gold and silver simple and easy to understand. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals.
Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD. One more time, 833-995-G-O-L-D.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
You're listening to 24, the Year of Impact, with Clay and Buck.
We bring in now Tulsi Gabbard, former congresswoman from Hawaii, in the mix for potentially being vice president for Donald Trump. And Tulsi, we got a lot we'd like to hit with you. Appreciate you joining us. Would you have ever believed that college campuses would be taken over by left-wingers and that they would be preventing Jewish students, for instance, on UCLA from being able to walk through different parts of campus because they were Jewish? Would you have thought that you would see that in your life?
You know, we've seen protests over generations on college campuses across the country. This has become increasingly so as we look at the woke academics and professors who've taken over so many of our universities. What I would not have imagined is the blatant, overt, it's worse than anti-Semitism because they're directly threatening violence or actually engaging in violence, taking over these Ivy League schools, taking over different universities, and saying things. I mean, when you listen to what they are saying, these are not peaceful protesters calling for a ceasefire. These are people who are repeating violent lines coming from Hamas itself, an Islamist terrorist group. People who are saying October 7th, the tragic, horrific attack that Hamas waged against Israel, they say October 7th should happen 10,000 times over. You have some professors at some of these Ivy League universities celebrating October 7th, calling that terrorist attack an awesome day. I never would have imagined that here in the United States, we would have young Americans in our universities celebrating a radical Islamist terrorist group in Hamas that is no different than Al-Qaeda or ISIS. This is more than the problems with law and order and the fact that we've got students and faculty and professors Jewish students, faculty, and professors who cannot walk through these schools, and other students who are not Jewish who don't feel safe in their schools. Bigger than that, we have this ideological warfare being waged by a radical Islamist terrorist group that is taking over our university, many of our universities here in the United States. This should be a major wake-up call to everyone in this country, because what these terrorists want is not only to wage these kinetic type of attacks, they are waging ideological warfare with the goal being to establish Islamist governance and make us all live under Sharia law. That is their end state.
New book out for Love of Country just came out yesterday. Tulsi, I want to jump right back into it. We just had a little bit of a comms issue there. So why is it so hard for Biden and this White House to have moral clarity on the issue of the campus protests?
You know, it's very telling that President Biden himself has not spoken out about these protests happening in campuses across the country. And it's coming from one of two places. One is he's either intellectually incapable of making the argument and the distinction to say, yes, I stand against anti-Semitism and I stand against radical Islamist terrorists like Hamas and the ideology that they are propagating. Or he is terrified of being called an Islamophobe, which is why he is being silent and cannot make that statement that I just made with strength and clarity and unequivocation. We look at the lack of rule of law being enforced, how basic law enforcement are being called in long after these people have been disrupting the peace and making these campuses unsafe for others. President Biden is so terrified of losing a few votes amongst those who are pro-Hamas or Hamas apologists, that he is failing at this very moment when the country needs to hear with a clear voice from the President of the United States that in this free country, Jewish people, everyone, must be allowed to walk safely and free in our society. You know, you look again, another issue where there's a clear contrast between President Trump and President Biden. I heard President Trump's statement loud and clear that was similar to the one that I just stated, pointing to the action that should be taken. And yet President Biden is completely silent at this moment.
Tulsi, you and I have a similar political evolution, I think, in many ways. I voted Democrat. You were a Democrat in Congress. And then I think we both started seeing all the craziness going on. One of the reasons why I think you would make an intriguing VP choice for Trump is because you could speak to maybe, I think, a lot of the people out there who have had a similar political evolution as you and I have, and are out there willing to vote for someone different if they acknowledge the fact that they have had that political evolution. Do you think you could make that case as Trump's VP to independent voters who might not have been willing to vote for him in 16 or 20? And what would you say if Trump came to you and said, Tulsi, I think you're the right choice for VP for me. I think you're still a registered independent. Would you be willing to become a Republican to run and make that case?
A few important points you brought up there, Clay. Yes, I am uniquely able to connect with people across the country who have walked a similar path that you and I have. Regardless of their political affiliation, they may still be Democrats, they may have left the Democratic Party, but people who are looking for someone to say, hey, come and stand with us as Americans who love our country, who cherish peace and freedom, and who are deeply concerned about how the Biden-Harris administration is undermining some of the most fundamental principles that make our country what it is, that make this country great. I have no doubt, because I've been already connecting and hearing from people who saw what I said when I left the Democratic Party, who are starting to read my book and say, hey, my gosh, this is exactly what I've been feeling and what I've been thinking. This is an essential opportunity to bring people together at a time when we need it in order to save our country. If President Trump asked me to serve as his running mate to help beat Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in this election so that we can begin the important work of saving our country, I would be honored to do so. And I would work tirelessly to make this happen because, like him, like you, like most Americans, I love our country. And I believe that we can save our country, but only if we take action now.
And Tulsi, have you and the president spoken recently? Just curious what you can tell us. I know you did a fundraiser with him a little while back at Mar-a-Lago. I'm wondering, one, if you've at least had conversations with him about how you would like to help in a future Trump administration. And if not, if you can't speak to that, I also wanted to know just what you think about what's going on. You mentioned love of country. I think it's very hard for anyone to see what's going on in New York City and not feel like something very fundamental about this nation is being damaged when a political, well, the nominee effectively for a political party is being used in this way and attacked in this way.
Yes, President Trump and I have spoken, and I won't share the contents of a private conversation, but he knows what motivates me. He knows my loyalty and my commitment to serving our country, and I look forward to and I'm hopeful of the opportunity to be able to be in a position where we can not only get our domestic policy back on track, but also get our foreign policy in order and walk us back from the brink of World War III and nuclear war. What's happening here, and I'm calling you from New York City today, where President Biden and his administration are engaging in this lawfare, tying up the presumptive Republican nominee in court as long as possible and wherever possible to keep him off the campaign trail and drain him of time and resources. I hope that more and more Americans are seeing what they are doing for what it is and how undemocratic it is. This is undermining our democracy and our ability as Americans to have a free and fair election. The thing that Democrats claim to stand for, they are the ones who are actually undermining our democracy. We have to point out that truth. And make sure that those who aren't watching it as closely as you and I may be understand the reality about what's going on and the doublespeak and hypocrisy between what the Democrat elites say and what they're actually doing, because what they're doing is dangerous.
I agree with just about everything you're saying, Tulsi. Some people will call into us, they will email us, and they will say, well, given the fact that Trump is 77 years old, I believe, and he's going to be, if he wins in 2024, an older president, the oldest president right alongside of Biden that we could possibly have, you might, as VP, have to end up being the president. I mean, that's a real concern with, obviously, Kamala Harris. It would be the same concern with Trump, even more so with age. It's always a concern with VP. What would you say to people who say, she's a Democrat, I'm not sure if I could trust her given she's going to be a heartbeat away from the presidency?
I'm not a Democrat. I've always been an independent-minded person. I left the Democratic Party almost 2 years ago. More important than that, though, I would just encourage people to listen to what I'm saying, not only now, but what I have been saying and the things that I have been working on for our country for quite some time. I was no sweetheart of the Democratic Party while I was in Congress, specifically because I challenged them on the issues where they were undermining our country's interests, the interests of the American people, and called them out when they were wrong. There are going to be some issues we agree on or disagree on, but fundamentally, I am committed to protecting and defending the Constitution of the United States, taking that oath that I swore both as a member of Congress and as a soldier where I still serve to heart. This is an unwavering commitment. And my desire to serve the American people is rooted in that commitment.
We have a link up to Tulsi's book at clayandbuck.com. So if you want to go and get your copy today, For Love of Country, Leave the Democrat Party Behind. Tulsi, we always appreciate when you make time for us. And we hope down the line there's some exciting news about how you can continue to serve the country in a new role. So thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Clay. Great to talk to you. Aloha.
Aloha. So, Clay, I got to say, it would be very interesting, and I think that there's a lot that would come from adding her into the situation with Donald Trump? Because I believe that she's, I mean, she's a convert, effectively. I don't think that she's somebody who still harbors. I mean, you can tell she has seen the Democrat beast and does not want to be any part of it anymore, and has really left that party. And I think, to your point about if you're trying to win over independents and people, you know, you got right wing ground pounders like me who are like, I've been right wing since I could spell my name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, we got a lot of those listening right now, obviously. But if you want to win over some of those middle of the road folks or some of those people who are the persuadables, I think somebody who has herself been persuaded, truly persuaded. I believe in her conversion. I mean, having spoken to her privately and personally, I don't think she's playing some game now. I think she knows, oh my gosh, the Democrats are destroying the country. I got to stop this.
Yeah, I would be curious to hear from some of y'all out there who heard that interview, 800-282-2882. I think she's firmly in the mix to be the next vice president for Trump. I think Trump likes her. The reason I like her, and I'm not picking who I think would be the best VP, I've said that I think Tim Scott is going to be the pick, and I still do. But the thing that I like about her is, obviously, you heard the question, I have had a similar political evolution as her, and I think sometimes when you've seen that evolution, you are more committed than somebody might have been if you've been a Republican for 40 years. I think she's scared of where she sees the country going. And I just told you, I feel like right now, from a metaphor perspective, back in the day, this is like a stagecoach that's out of control. I don't know how many of you feel this, but if you remember the old Western when the horses suddenly started to run and the stagecoach is bucking along behind, something's bad's happening. That's where we are, I feel like.
You're listening to 24, the most important year in politics, with Clay Travis and Buck Sexton.
Vivek Ramaswamy joins us now. I know you've been all over the country helping out Donald Trump, but I just want to start with this. You're in the neighborhood of Buck and myself's ages. You've been on a lot of these college campuses, I'm sure, on your presidential campaign, but also you were on them as a student not very long ago. Would you have believed that we would ever be in a situation where a place like UCLA would be banning Jewish students from being able to walk through the campus, that they would be pulling down the United States flag and replacing it with the flag of Palestine all over the country? Could you have foreseen this, Vivek?
So, not with great pleasure, no, but you could see the direction this was going for a very long time. And I'm not trying to claim some sort of level of foresight from before, but even a few years ago, when I wrote my book, Woke Inc., before people really knew what the word woke was, that's where this road ends. And I think what many people may misunderstand even about the current situation is describing it as anti-Semitic, while understandable, misses the point, actually. What you're really seeing amongst young people, and you've been seeing this for the last decade or more, is a deep hunger for purpose. They are starved for a cause. They are lost. And when you don't believe in the American flag, you start pledging allegiance to a different flag instead. It could be the transgender flag. It could be the Palestinian flag. It could be, in some cases, even weirdly, the Ukraine flag. And I think that that's a separate debate to be had. But we have this innate hunger for purpose, to be part of something bigger than ourselves. And when you want to be part of something bigger than yourself and you no longer believe in God, you no longer believe in your country, you no longer identify as a member of a family or see yourself as an individual, you start believing in new kinds of secular cults instead. And this is just the latest one. And so I think that's really what's happening. It's not specific to this issue. Most students who are protesting on behalf of Palestine have no idea what the heck they're actually even protesting for. You have students on campuses chanting infittada, which they don't realize is actually a complete inversion of the word they're trying to say, which is intifada, the Arab word for uprising. They don't even know what they're chanting. You look at some of those video recordings, that's what you hear. That's the essence of what's going on, is these people are lost. And I think we got to see that before we actually find an actual solution, rather than just playing whack-a-mole, which is what I think many in the conservative movement, frankly, have been trying to do as a response.
Hey, Vivek, it's Buck. You know, on these campuses, we're seeing a level of madness that is surprising to some, but I think for those of us who've been paying attention, this is just the latest iteration of it. This is the latest spasm, if you will, of their lunacy. And I'm reminded a little bit of the movie Aliens. Are you an Aliens fan? Do you remember? I think it just had its like anniversary recently. It was released 40 years ago.
40th anniversary, I think. Yeah. I saw it was in the theaters. Yeah.
I thought it was a great, great movie. James Cameron movie back in the day. But remember when they say we have to nuke the site from orbit. It's the only way to be sure. No one's suggesting we nuke these campuses, but I just want to know, is there a way to fix these things, or do we just need to separate? Do people that have a recognition of how toxic this has become realize that there's no fixing Columbia University as it currently stands? How do you see that?
Well, look, I think that actually those two things go together. Is building alternative institutions is a necessary next step, and some of those institutions are being built. When you think about the private sector, corporate America, the financial services sector, when you think about academic institutions and universities, that competition does one thing. It provides an alternative for where people are able to go. The likes of University of Austin, Texas, Ralston College, Hillsdale. Think about even places like Ashland University here in Ohio, where I spoke recently. Really smart students, by the way. Completely not the goal to be large national name brand institutions, but just pursue excellence in local contexts. I think as those competitors start to draw great students away from the esteemed institutions of yesterday, the Columbias, I mean, even I'm ashamed of the alma maters and the behaviors I've seen in places like Harvard and Yale, that is going to have an effect not just on providing additional choices for students, but I think that's going to change the behaviors of those existing institutions as well. So it's the absence of competition that actually breeds this type of discontent. And so I do think creating new institutions is an answer. So it's not just separation for the sake of separation. It's separation for the sake of actually bringing competition in a marketplace of ideas where it has been lacking. I think part of that solution, though, is we have to offer an alternative vision, especially to that next generation. And this is where the conservative movement has fallen short. We will sit here complaining about one of those religions at a time, right? Wokeism, transgenderism, climatism, COVIDism. You could have your favorite ism. Anti-Semitism now fits that list. I think that each of those religions, those cults, are really just symptoms of that deeper void. And I think we have to, as a movement, go back to being firm about what we actually stand for, right? The individual, family, nation, and God beat race, gender, sexuality, and climate if we have the courage to actually stand for something. And so some of this is on the other side, but some of this is our own problem too, is we've grown lazy as a movement, just criticizing the radical Biden agenda or whatever it is that we're pontificating about without actually offering an alternative vision of what it means to be an American, what it means to be an individual, what it means to be sovereign. I think sovereignty itself, sovereignty at the level of the individual and the family and the nation and being a nation under God, those are foreign concepts to the conservative movement of today. It's not exactly what you hear Republican politicians or even commentators talking about today, as opposed to using whatever the latest trope was on social media to criticize some flub of Biden. That's lazy, and it's falling short of what we really need to be doing if we want to fill that vacuum of purpose that accounts for a lot of the lunacy that we're seeing.
Vivek, you are like Buck and myself. You've been very fortunate. You're building a family now. You are obviously trying to spread what I would hope is an antidote to this this issue with a lack of purpose that exists across much of American youth. What's the best way for you to do that in your mind as we gear up for the 6-month, basically, starting block here of the election in November? Do you think VP is that play? Have you talked to Trump about that? Do you think that you're in the mix for that? Are there other cabinet positions that to you make sense? I know you're going to be working hard to get Trump elected no matter what, but on an individual basis, what's the most effective version you think of yourself? Where should you go? Where should you be?
So look, I think every person's got to look themselves in the mirror and say, here are my God-given gifts. How am I going to use those to maximize impact on saving our country at a moment where, let's be honest, if we don't get this right in the next 7 years, that's how long it took to win the American Revolution, I don't think we have a country left. And I do think we're in one of those 1776 moments today. And so if Donald Trump is now the George Washington figure of winning that modern American Revolution, took all of our founding fathers, many of them, to each wear their own different hats to really set this nation into motion. A couple of things I look at. What are the things we need to accomplish that we can accomplish through executive power if we're successful? Two mass deportations. One is the mass deportations of millions of illegals in this country who shouldn't be here, seal the border along with it, end birthright citizenship, and once and for all fix that immigration issue in our country. And the second is the mass deportation of about 3 million federal bureaucrats out of Washington, D.C. that should have never been there in the first place, cleaning up that fourth branch, that deep state, that I think is the source of the rot and the corruption that infests every layer of government and even our culture. So those are two of the things I've been most passionate about in my own presidential campaign. And if I'm able to play a role in doing one or both or the other of those things or both of them, you know, I think I'm going to do everything I can to play my role to restore the country. But in terms of what position different people occupy, that decision belongs to President Trump. It's the beauty of actually having a chief executive who's been an executive, deserves to actually staff the administration and the way he runs the country with the people who he believes are best in each position. He and I have had some great conversations, and I'll be honored to play some, hopefully, significant role in reviving this country.
Just don't forget
I'm
your friends when you're Treasury Secretary,
more
buddy.
Attached to the country. Okay.
Do you think you're still in the running? Do you think you're still in the running for VP, or do you think someone else is going to be in that role and maybe there's somewhere
I'm not
else?
Play,
that
would... I'm not going to, out of respect to my conversations with President Trump and for the decisions he needs to make, I'm not going to play the game of, you know, musical chairs of who or speculation. What I will say is I've told him this is I'm excited to serve in whatever capacity maximizes impact for the country. We've had a great relationship, and I think there's a lot of people, by the way, in our bench that can play a lot of important roles, each of which we're going to need to save the country. And so whether that's people from the White House positions to the VP to cabinet level positions, all of them are important, and I'm here to play my part. And so
I just think
I'm optimistic
it's important.
We're going to be successful. We can't count our chickens before they hatch. I want to say a word about this too, is
yeah,
this
go
discussion
ahead.
Presumes that there's some sort of victory that we can take for granted in November. Remember, just a couple of years ago, we had this red wave that was supposed to come. That red wave never came. And I think that we're actually potentially on track to being complacent and seeing that same risk play out unless we actually step up and do things differently this time around, both in terms of articulating our alternative vision and in terms of the legwork of execution, right? A vision without execution is a hallucination. That's what Einstein, that's what Thomas Edison said. And I think it's true every bit today in politics, as it is in any other realm. You don't like early voting? Too bad. Got to play by the rules to win in order to change the rules to be what you want them to be. And so, you know, I think that it is important to have transition plans and what comes afterwards. And I think President Trump's being very thoughtful about that. And I'm hopeful to play an important role in saving this country. But we're only going to get there if we actually succeed by decisive margins. And let's be honest, a 50.1 margin doesn't work this time around. I think that, let's be very frank, a landslide minus some shenanigans is still a decisive victory. And that's what we're going to need at a moment where we're skating on thin ice, where we have decisive majorities in not just the Senate, but also the House. To combine that with control of the White House, that's what it's going to take to politically revive this country. And so let's not get ahead of ourselves as well to assume that there's some outcome we're planning for.
Vivek Ramaswamy. Vivek, come back. Talk to us again soon. It's going to be an important 6 months or so here.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys. And keep up the good work of highlighting things that other people aren't talking about. I like that you guys do it, and we need more of that.
Thanks so much, man. Good to talk to you. Why are people still on the fence about owning gold and silver? I just don't understand.
Have we already forgotten about regional bank closures, inflation, global instability, and the potential for serious world conflicts?
You can look to precious metals for various reasons. One, having tangible currency on hand as part of your bug out plan. Two, diversifying your portfolio as a hedge against inflation. And three, historically, gold increases in value over time.
You keep yourself informed about global events. You see the increase in conflicts around the globe. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either.
The people with Oxford Gold Group are real pros. They make owning gold and silver simple and easy to understand. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals.
Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD. One more time, 833-995-G-O-L-D.
Today more than ever, we're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical bill expert, finding savings can seem impossible. And who has the time? HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance and reviews your medical claims as they come in from your healthcare providers. Then, HealthLock's technology flags and alerts you to any errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and frauds to help you and your family save. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from selected past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save more than $130 million. Saving on medical bills starts with knowing where to look, and HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden medical bill errors. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
The number one fantasy sports app in America is PrizePicks. It's the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. 5 million members already active on PrizePicks. If you've not yet downloaded PrizePicks, do it today. Unlike other apps, on PrizePicks, it's just you against the number. It's about the players and not the teams. You look for the sports you know best and that you follow the most. Then you make a single decision on each player projection, more or less. Every time you play, you pick 2 to 6 players and make that one decision. You can win up to 100 times your money on PrizePicks with as little as 4 picks. More player action on PrizePicks now than ever, and it's the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states now. PrizePicks also gives you injury insurance so your picks stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. Download the free PrizePicks app and open your account. Use my name, Clay, for a first deposit match up to $100. Download the PrizePicks app. Use promo code Clay, that's C-L-A-Y, to get set up and get a deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
You're listening to 24, the Year of Impact, with Clay and Buck.
We're joined by Tim Sheehy, who is running for U.S. Senate in Montana, an absolutely critical fight against Tester up there. Tim is a former Navy SEAL, founder and CEO of an aerospace company, and a lot of other great stuff we'll get into here in just a second. Tim, appreciate you being with us. First time on the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for taking the time.
So let's just start with it. What's pushing you to try to push this guy Tester aside and become the next senator from the great state of Montana?
Well, to be honest, I'd rather be doing something else. You know, I got a great business. I got 4 young kids and we live out in our farm and ranch in Montana. So I'd love to stay here and not have to waste my time in the swamp. But the reality is, America's at a crossroads. And in summer 2021, you know, I watched Kabul fall in the most disgraceful, despicable, shameful, you know, display of American idiocy in a generation. And, you know, I fought there. My wife fought there. She was a Marine Corps officer. You know, her brothers were in the military. So almost all of our, you know, best friends, you know, we went to the Naval Academy, we were in the service, served there. I lost a lot of friends there. I was wounded there. I mean, the list goes on. I mean, the amount of sacrifice that a very small sector of our population made, as you all know, about 1% joined and went, you know, most of America was never affected by the war. So those of us who went again and again and again and had deep relationships there were so disgusted to see the way in which Joe Biden and his lackeys dishonored all of our sacrifice and made a fool of our country at the end of our nation's longest war. And, you know, I worked so hard to get friends and allies, interpreters out of there alive while our government did nothing. So, you know, that experience really woke me up to the fact that, you know, if good people don't get involved in government, if good people don't get involved and try to be part of the solution, we're never going to get this country back. So that's why I'm doing it. That's why I'm here. And let's get to work.
We're talking to Tim Sheehy. He is the Republican nominee in Montana getting ready to take on John Tester. For people out there listening in Montana and certainly around the nation who are paying attention to what could be a race that would flip control of the Senate, John Tester has gotten by the past several cycles by claiming that he's just kind of a moderate, middle-of-the-road guy, old Montana farmer who just tries to make common sense decisions. The data doesn't actually support that he does that. For people who might have bought that argument, now that you have dove into this and you are running, what does John Tester actually do in office as opposed to what he says he's going to do?
Well, again, I mean, Tester has 2 acts he plays. You know, when he's in D.C., he's a loyal foot soldier for Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden. You know, and then as soon as he comes back to Montana, he throws on a Carhartt jacket and walks around and says, you know, he's working with Republicans to secure the border. The reality is, you know, he's derated by the NRA, 100% Planned Parenthood. He's, you know, 90 plus percent voting record with Joe Biden. Actually, I think it's more during this term. I think he's like 95 or 96%, you know, this term. You know, he's voting. He voted against the Laken Riley Act, voted to let boys play girls sports, has voted to continue funding illegal immigrant flights all over this country. And, you know, he's a loyal foot soldier for the left. So he plays the game in Montana, and, you know, he's been able to survive, as you said, several terms. You know, he's part of the Lucky Calendar Club, 06, 12, and 18, all strong blue years. And, you know, Chuck Schumer and Harry Reid before him, you know, they dumped tremendous resources into the state. They literally buy this Senate seat every cycle because they know John Tester can't win without $100 million of dark money, $200 million of dark money pouring into the state and protecting him. And then finally, the last thing they do is they have one tactic every election, and that's outright character assassination and smear tactics on the Republican opponent. They can never run on the issues of Montana because he loses on the issues all the way down the ballot. So instead, they just savage the opponent with completely disgusting personal attacks, and that's what they're doing now, but the polls are showing it's not working.
Speaking to Tim Sheehy, he is running up in Montana for a Senate seat, and Tim, you mentioned your opponent playing make-believe when it comes to wanting to secure the border. What's your position on the border? You might have heard Trump, I think it was just 2 days ago in Michigan, saying there's going to be major deportations if he wins, a whole range of things. The border in some polls is the number one or number two issue, depends on which pollster you believe most. It's certainly top of mind. What is your position when it comes to the crisis we have now of an open border, illegals pouring in by the millions? What should be done?
My position on everything, and this issue is no different, is common sense. No other country in the world lets happen what's happening to us right now. No one else in the world. No other country says, hey, millions of people come in here, some of them probably good people. Of course, a lot of them very bad people coming here, bringing fentanyl, you know, bringing their gang ties, you know, murdering people, literally murdering people and getting away with it. We saw those kids in New York City, you know, beating cops in the street, and the next day they're free, let go. Meanwhile, we're arresting presidents and putting them in trial. We have the resources for that, but we don't have the resources to prosecute criminal, illegal aliens here murdering Americans. It's insane. So my policy is very simple. That border needs to be airtight tomorrow. There's no excuse. We need to stop incentivizing people to come here. And how are we incentivizing? We're telling them when you come here, you're going to get free clothes, free lodging, free food, free air transportation around the country to a city of your choosing. And there's no consequences. And, you know, we as a country have to get back to rewarding good behavior and punishing bad behavior. That's what common sense is. If you break the law, you go to jail. If you're a squatter in someone's home, you don't arrest the homeowner, you arrest the squatter. And across the board, we're, you know, up is down and down is up right now. Boys are girls and girls are boys. It's insanity. And the border's no different. We have to lock it down. I'm pro-immigration. I want people to come to this country the right way. I've brought people to this country the right way to work for my companies. But that's a big difference from bringing people here the right way to have people pour into this country who don't want what's right for our country by the millions. It's ridiculous.
Tim Sheehy with us right now. He's running for Senate in Montana, trying to flip control of the chamber back as his seat is one of the top targets of both sides, frankly, in terms of the battle for who's going to control the Senate. I don't know if you know the numbers yet, but I imagine that the amount of money raised in a Montana Senate race is going to be 90-95% out of state, and that people in Montana are just going to be flooded and inundated with the amount of money that's being spent. How are you doing in terms of raising money from actual Montanans, and how much of the money that you're going to have to fight against from John Tester is going to be flooding in from elsewhere? And for people out there who are listening and want to support you, how can they do it? But I'm just kind of curious. I mean, this is going to be one of the most expensive Senate races, I would imagine, anywhere in the country.
This will be the most expensive race in American history per vote of any race. The most expensive race in American history on a per vote basis, which is ridiculous. It's embarrassing. You know, we need to have campaign finance reform. We need to fix this crap, but that's not going to happen before November. So in the meantime, timfremt.com, you know, folks can learn about me and about the race. You know, yeah, we're getting outspent. I mean, Tester's raising, you know, sometimes $8 million a quarter. You know, every quarter we're hoping to punch through two, maybe three if we're lucky. And, you know, we're doing grassroots, hitting the whole state, every VFW hall, every rodeo. But you're absolutely right. I mean, it is. We're getting outraised 3-1, 4-1, 5-1, and outspent. I mean, there's a period of time there was $1 million a week of just pure savage attack ads on me. You know, nothing even talking about what Tester's doing, just made up crap about me, my family, our charitable work, our businesses, my military record. And that's what they spend their money on. The money goes to do one thing. Assault me and my family and everything we've done. My wife and I both served this country in combat. I was wounded in combat. We've created hundreds of jobs. But of course, they're turning all that into evil. And what I've challenged Chester is, hey, why don't we just have a race about the issues, man? Why don't we just talk about the border and gas prices and foreign policy and inflation? Instead, all he wants to do is make up lies about us. But that's where the money's going. We're getting outspent. You know, again, pick your week, 2-1, 3-1, 4-1, 5-1, but we're getting crushed. But we're winning in the polls. The last poll that came out, we're 48-45. So the more money they spend, the more people are realizing that sending John Tester back for a fourth term to sell out America for another 6 years is not the right answer.
You're actually favored. I don't know if you pay attention to the poly market offshore markets. For people out there who are interested in investing, you're favored to win this race right now, despite what they're spending on against you. You said something pretty extraordinary there, that per vote, this is going to be the most expensive race that has ever happened in the history of the United States. What kind of cost per voter are we looking at? What is this race going to cost?
Well, you know, we got about 700,000. I mean, you got a million-ish residents in Montana. You know, typical voter turnout, we'll get 600,000, 700,000. Obviously, we're trying to drive more voter turnout because we know that the people in Montana don't want boys and girls locker rooms. They don't want open borders. They don't want $6 diesel. So we know that the people support us. We just got to get them to the polls. And please, everybody listening, you know, I assume you're conservative, you're listening. You know, we're getting beat coast to coast 10% on voter turnout by the Democrats. You know, we all want, I want in-person voter ID 100%. But guess what? That's not the law of the land this year. We need to make sure Republicans get out and vote early, vote by mail, vote absentee, vote day, whatever it is, just make sure you actually vote because we're getting crushed on turnout. And in Montana, they're saying this race could be 250 to 300 million for 600,000 to 700,000 voters.
Oh, you know, my
crazy.
Goodness.
Those are crazy numbers. Exactly. It's insane. But, you know, that's where we're at. And you know, we're not going to beat them on the money side. We know that. But we got to have enough to fight back. You know, I'm not going to be able to have more ammo, but I got to be able to fight back.
Tim, you got a big chunk of you know, it's funny because I think to people who haven't spent a lot of time in Montana and don't know the state particularly well, it's a Republican state, right? If you look at the voting demographics and party registration, but there's a big chunk of independents who can swing it one way or the other, right? Is that the breakdown in Montana? I remember someone telling me, you know, Bozeman's obviously very blue, a couple of other little blue pieces of the state, but the rest of the state's very red. Just give us a sense of how that all comes together and how independents, you know, view this race and why you think you're able to get more of them.
Yeah, no, thank you for asking that, because you're absolutely right. There's an oversimplification of what people think Montana is politically. You know, they say, well, they're a big, square, empty western state, so they must be deep red. And the fact is, it's far more complex than that. I mean, yes, Trump won the state by 20 points, you know, 17 points, you know, he landslide the state. But the reality is, just 9 years ago here in Montana, you know, 7 out of 8 statewide elected offices were Democrats. And today, 8 of 9 are Republicans. And that just shows the shift. The state has not changed. What's changed is the Democrat Party has left the state. You know, the Democrats in Montana, of course, yes, you have your, you know, pro-Hamas, Palestinian, lefty loonies on the college campuses. But the traditional Montana Democrats were union. They were labor. They were, you know, they were back when you could still have a Democrat that was pro-gun, pro-cop, pro-border, pro-life Democrat. You know, that doesn't really exist anymore. And those people in Montana have said, man, this party that used to support my grandfather's mining union, pipe fitters union, you know, like they're not standing up for the white working class blue collar guy anymore. You know, they're selling us out. And, so that's been the big shift. And, you know, the other common misconception is folks coming into the state, especially during COVID, you know, they see the show Yellowstone, like, oh, everyone's a liberal Californian parachuting into Montana, making it blue. And that's actually incorrect. Most of the people coming here are political refugees, fleeing Portland, Seattle, Sacramento, San Francisco, LA, saying, I'm getting away from this craziness. I'm getting away from, you know, homelessness and crime, and crazy taxes. And I'm going to move to a state where I'm going to be free. And they're bringing those values here. And that's another reason why we're seeing the state solidify red. So there is an independent swing, and I wouldn't quite call it independent. It's more of a libertarian swing here in Montana. We do have a lot of folks that their mindset is, hey, less government's better government. And I can't disagree with that one bit. You know, their outlook is really, I don't really care what party, just stay out of my Cheerios, don't bother me, and go home. And I think those folks, of course, there's only one party now that even mentions smaller government, that even mentions restricting the power of our federal government, and we know which party that is. So I think that kind of libertarian position has drifted to the right here in these last few years, especially during and after COVID, when we saw the greatest trampling of our constitutional rights in the history of this country.
Tim4MT.com is where you can go to help out and pitch in. Tim Sheehy, we are certainly rooting for you here. Thank you for your service to the country, and thank you for joining us on the show.
Thanks for your time. We'll be back some other time.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how to get comfortable with fear and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern.
People say, what are you afraid of, right? I'm afraid of fear because it's like I want to confront anything in my life that feels challenging on those levels.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.